ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। As I was being introduced, I remembered last year I was in Atlanta, US, and there was a house program arranged. And this was the house of a Punjabi family, and most of the audiences also were from that community. So the host, he wanted to introduce me before the program. And he asked my name. So when I told him, he like kind of rehearsed it more than 10 times, whether he'll be able to pronounce it properly. And then after rehearsing it, he was telling me that this is the most difficult name I have come across. And then I was sensing that he might goof up when he would introduce me, specifically when he would pronounce my name. So he took the microphone and he started introducing, saying, "So we are very fortunate to have amongst us His Grace Shiksha Ashik Prabhu." And after the program, one person came up to me and he said, "You have a very romantic name." So then I told him what my real name is. Anyways, coming back to our topic. So today we have proposed to discuss on this topic the art of reliving. One time there was a boy who was drowning in a river, and a sage who was passing by, he saw this boy drowning, so he went and saved him. And upon being saved, this boy told to the sage that, "I would like to thank you for whatever you have done to me, saved my life." And the sage said that, "If you really want to thank me, then the life which I have saved of yours, you should make it worthy of being saved. That will be the real thanks if you want to give me." So it is said that as far as our life is concerned, if we divide our life and length, breadth, height, depth, then we can't control the length of our life. When I say length of our life, it refers to the age. How much are we going to live? So as far as the length of our life is concerned, it is beyond our control. But as far as the depth, the height, the breadth of our life is concerned, that is in our control, which refers to the quality of our life. So length is compared to the quantity of our life, and the quality is compared to the depth of our life. Like last week I saw this one billboard. It said, "Now we have come up with an age control soap. If you apply this soap, you can control your age," they think. But as far as our age, as far as the time factor which influences our age is concerned, no matter how much these kind of soaps we apply, it's not that death or the time factor is going to just wait and watch as we apply this soap, thinking that we are controlling our age. In fact, by the cataclysms of time, the manufacturer of that soap, the consumer of that soap, the soap itself will be finished. And it will be just some names on the billboard. So therefore, as far as the quality of our life is concerned, it should be given more importance than just the quantity of our life. Now if we compare our life to a video cassette or a movie, then we see that in this very life we experience so many different emotions as a movie might have. Sometimes there are comedy scenes. Sometimes there are scenes which are very tragic. Sometimes there are horror scenes in our life, violent scenes, romantic scenes. And all through that, there is one emotion which is constant. That is the suspense. We don't know what's going to happen the next day or the next scene. What's going to be the next scene? Now, if a facility is given to us by which we can rewind this tape or we can erase this movie in this very life, and a facility is given that we can again record a fresh movie on this cassette of our life, we can again live a fresh, clean and pure life. So how many of you would like to relive this kind of life in this very life itself? That whatever might have happened, but if the facility is given, how many of us we would again would want to start a fresh, clean, pure life in this very life itself? So this will be the theme of our talk this evening. How to relive within this life itself. There was an anecdote which I read, in which there is an old man who is reflecting back in his life, and he's saying that when I was in school, I was dying to finish the school and come to college. Why? Because school means discipline, uniform, attendance, homework. So school has so many regulations and limitations as far as my freedom is concerned. So this old man is reflecting back, saying that when I was in school, I was dying to come out of school and get into college. Why in college? Because in college, no uniform, first of all. In fact, every day is like a fashion show. Then there is no homework. The only homework is to plan out which will be the next movie tomorrow I'll be seeing. And as far as attendance is concerned, sometimes I'll pay a visit to my classroom. So he's saying that I was dying to live that kind of a lifestyle, free lifestyle, in college. But then I realized that if college life is like kind of a party, and if I want that this party should continue forever, then I have to get that piece of paper. What is that? The certificate, the degree, the graduation certificate. I have to get that piece of paper. In fact, it's just a story of pieces of paper if we see. In order to get that one piece of paper, we have to study many pieces of paper. So that when the examination paper comes, we can properly reproduce on that piece of paper what we have studied in so many pieces of paper. So that we can get that one piece of paper. And when we get that one piece of paper, that will fetch us many pieces of paper. So it is just a story of pieces of paper. So this old man, he's reflecting back that when I was in college, I was dying, then I should get this degree and get that piece of paper so that I can get a job. And then when I got a job, then I was dying to get married. What to speak then? Like in one of our Gita course, one person was asking one of our devotees that, now when we make that point that amongst the 84 lakh species, we human beings are only 4 lakh. So this is a natural, spontaneous question in every Gita course people ask. What do you mean 4 lakh human species? So this devotee was explaining, jokingly, he said that when you are young, you know, there are different categories of men, you know, human species you are speaking of. So when you are very young and vibrant, then you are like a Spider-Man, jumping around and, you know, very vibrant in your life, like a Spider-Man. And then when you get married, you become a Superman. And after a few years, then you become a watchman. And after many years, you become a Doberman. Like one man, he went to a library and he wanted a book. Like in library, they have many different sections of different categories of books. So he asked, do you have this book, Man, the Master of Woman? So the librarian said, at the fiction counter. So this old man, he's reflecting back saying that when I got job, then I was dying to get married and have children. And then after that, I was dying that I can retire and relax back and just recline on my easy chair and enjoy retired life. So he's reflecting like this. When I was in school, I was dying to get into college. When I was in college, I was dying to get a job. When I had a job, I was dying to get married. Then I was dying to retire and relax. And he says, now I'm dying and I forgot to live. So many times in our life, life becomes like a waiting room. You know, railway platform, you have seen the waiting rooms. So we simply wait sometimes for the miseries to go away from our life if we are miserable. And if not that, we are simply waiting for the pleasures to come. Like it is defined, what is the definition of old age and youth? The definition of a person who is young is that when the pleasure is absent, he feels pain. And old age is when the pain is absent, he feels pleasure. For a youth, when there is nothing happening, no party, no picnic, you know, nothing going on, no pleasurable activities going on, he feels so painful and miserable. And for an old man, if there is no pain, pleasurable life. So that's the only difference. So many times in our life, we live our life only with this hope, only if. Statements are very much common. Only if I could have had that. Only if I could have been there or done that. So, therefore, today we shall be discussing on this particular topic, the art of reliving, and we have divided our talk in 8 steps. So step 1, we'll be discussing how to take the responsibility of our life first. Then step 2 will be taking the courage to change. Step 3, getting out of our comfort zone. Step 4, developing a terrific attitude. Step 5, building a solid set of values. Step 6, building protective shields. Step 7, getting a life education. Step 8, living our life with humility. Now, beginning with step one, taking responsibility of our life. Now, this word responsibility, if we divide, it says our ability to respond to a certain situation or to certain factors in our life. Response abilities. Now, when a person is in materialistic, animalistic consciousness, then one thinks that my responsibility or my ability to respond is only towards eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. One thinks that this is my only responsibility. How to eat well, how to sleep well, how to mate well, and how to defend well. Now, as far as we human beings are concerned, if we see, we are very much ill-equipped. Physically, we are very much ill-equipped as against the animals. We can't swim like a fish, but we do try to swim, but we can't swim like a fish. We can't fly like an eagle. We do try to fly also. We can't jump like a monkey or climb like a monkey. We can't run like a cheetah. So all of these different physical attributes are concerned, we are very much ill-equipped in that. In fact, what to speak of we being ill-equipped? There is one preeminent ecologist from the Harvard University, Mr. E.O. Wilson. And he came up with a wonderful analysis as far as ecology is concerned in regards to we human beings. Now, this eminent ecologist who has studied ecology for many, many decades, do you want to know what is his analysis about we human beings? He's saying that imagine if all the human beings on the surface of this planet Earth are wiped off, which means there is not even a single human being on the surface of this planet Earth. So he's asking this question, what would happen? He's saying, if that takes place, Earth's planet will benefit immensely. If there is not even a single human being on the planet Earth, Earth will benefit immensely. He's saying that the global warming will be repaired, the degenerated rainforest will be regenerated, the extinct species will be revived back if all the human beings are wiped off. And then he goes on to say, as against this, if any other species is taken away from the surface of this planet Earth, then there will be a heavy ecological imbalance. So according to this ecologist, we human beings physically are the most unwanted species for this planet Earth. Like there was a zoo in which they had the most rare of all species, most unique and special species. And people were lining up, and there was one section in that zoo which said that you can see the most dangerous creature on the planet Earth. And there was a long queue. People had to take special tickets. So as they were entering, there was a huge cage. So as all of these people were entering to see who is this most dangerous creature on this planet Earth. So inside the cage was empty, but there was a huge mirror. And as everyone was entering, they were looking at themselves and then looking up the most dangerous creature available on the planet Earth. So as far as the physical attributes of just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending is concerned, we are the most ill-equipped. How much can we eat? How much can we sleep? How much can one have sex life? How much can one defend? So therefore, then it behooves on every single human being that one has to understand one's proper responsibility. What is that factor within us which is the most efficient as far as our ability to respond? And that is Athato Brahma Jigyasa. As a human being, this is our foremost responsibility, that we have to understand who am I, find answers to this question, and to understand why am I suffering when I don't want. Now, as far as the irresponsibles are concerned, they play a kind of a blame game just to wish away from their real responsibilities. So the blame played by the irresponsible is whatever happens in their life, immediately the finger is pointed to these things. It's the situation which is responsible. It is the place. It is the circumstances. Those are the people who are responsible. The time factor, and ultimately God. Like one man, he went for a job interview, and the person asked him, "So how can you prove that you will be a responsible employee?" So he said, "In my previous job, I was a very responsible employee. Whatever went wrong, I was held responsible." So many times those who are irresponsible, they play this blame game. That if this situation wouldn't have been in my life, I would be a nice guy. If the place, only if I would have born in America, only if that would have happened to me, only if the circumstances were favorable to me, people, that person, you know, that person is the cause, that bloody bugger, he's the one who is the cause of whatever is happening in my life. Circumstances, people, every time playing this blame game. Therefore it is said, by rule, man is a fool. When it is hot, wants it cool. When it is cool, wants it hot. Always wanting that which is not. And ultimately, if there is no one to blame, the finger goes up. Ye sab uska kya dhara hai? He is the one who is doing everything in my life. Kyon tune duniya banayi? Like there was a Jewish rabbi, his name was Harold Kushner. And being a rabbi, he was a staunch believer in God. So he had a son who developed a very, very different kind of a disease called progeria. This disease, progeria, is when a person starts to prematurely age. If the person is, say, 10 years old, he looks and he becomes 60 years old like that. So this Harold Kushner, this Jewish rabbi, his 7-year-old son developed this disease, progeria. And when he was 14 years old, he died of that disease. So this rabbi, he starts analyzing that why this thing happened. Why only to me? Why only to my son? I was a God-fearing man. I was a God's man. Why it all happened to me and my son? So he wrote a book entitled When Bad Things Happen to Good People. And in this book, he is analyzing the different qualities of God. And he's saying that God might be called omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. But in my analysis, God might not have all these qualities simultaneously existing. He might be omniscient, but he might not be omnipotent. Otherwise, how did my son die? Or if he's omnipotent, he might not have the ability to be present everywhere. He's not omnipresent maybe. Therefore, he was not able to present himself in front of my son when my son died. So in that book, he says that, I believe in God, We should give some respite to God. After all, He has created this huge universe, and we should relieve Him from so many other responsibilities. Or maybe the files of my son might have got misplaced by him, so therefore my son died. And then there was another person. His name was Charles Darwin. Familiar? So this person, his 8-year-old son died of cholera. Now Charles Darwin, before he came up with all those theories, he was a staunch Christian. So after his son died, now Harold Kushner, he kind of struck a compromise between atheism and theism. But Charles Darwin went to that extreme that doesn't exist. And then he started to propagate the theory of evolution and all of that. So many times the blame game is played in order to just shrug off the responsibility from our shoulders. Now you must have heard of this famous tennis champion, Arthur Ashe. Huh? You have heard? He was a Wimbledon champion. And Arthur Ashe, he died of AIDS. So after he won one particular Wimbledon championship, and it was known to everyone that he has this disease, AIDS, and he'll be dying soon. So one of his fans wrote to him that, why did God give this disease to you of all people? Such a wonderful player you are. There were so many other, you know, like parasites in societies. Why this disease was not given to them? Why to you? Why only to you? So Arthur Ashe, very wonderfully, he wrote back to this person. He said, every year, 50 crore people, they start up to learn tennis. Every year, 50 crore people, they attempt to learn tennis. And out of these 50 crore, only 5 lakh, they are able to learn tennis in that year. And out of those 5 lakh, only 50,000, they get to learn professional tennis. And out of those 50,000 who get to learn professional tennis, only 50 enter into the Grand Slams. The Australian, you know, the Wimbledon, the US and like that. And out of those 50 who are able to enter the Grand Slam, only 4 reach the semi-finals of Wimbledon. And out of those 4, only 2, they reach the finals. And only 1 wins. And this year, I was that winner. So when I was holding that trophy, I didn't ask God, why only me? I didn't ask God that question, that why only myself? I was selected out of those 50 crore in that year who started off to learn tennis. Therefore, it is said that life is like a game of tennis. If you want to win, you have to serve well. And it begins with love all. And if you know, you might see that ups and downs in life, you know, there might be some deuces, advantages, but ultimately the match point is deciding whether you're going to win. So that's like, you know, the moment of death. So a person who is responsible, he understands that what is my inherent ability to respond the best to which kind of circumstance. And therefore, we have some quotes here. This is from the commercial of Volkswagen. On the road of life, there are passengers and there are drivers. But drivers wanted. So many times in our life, we might enjoy just sitting on the passenger seat, like a spectator. I don't want to take the responsibility. I just want to be a spectator. But many times if you want to change or relive, we have to take charge and get on the driver's seat of our life. People who get on this world are the people who get up and look for circumstances they want. And if they can't find them, they make them. G.B. Shaw. Now, there are two particular circles in our life which we have to deal with. There is a circle of no control. Just like over here you see, what are the certain things in this particular circle of our life which go beyond control? The color of our skin. Simple things. No matter how much soap we apply, no matter how many lotions and all that, you know, there is something which can't be changed. Color of our skin, location of our birth, choice of our parents, the weather, our past mistakes, and who will win the FIFA World Cup. Of course, nowadays we can't say, because many times many things are fixed also. But generally speaking, these things are beyond our control. So there is this circle of no control, and then there is a circle of control which includes the choices, the responses, and the attitudes which we can cultivate in our life. And both these circles, the circle of no control, results in people being reactive. Now, reactive people are those people that they wonder when things happen in their life, why it happened. It's compared like they are like a bottle of soda. When you shake a bottle of soda, what happens? All that fizz comes out. So reactive people are like bottle of soda. Little shaking and everything comes out. 7-Up becomes all down. Everything comes down. And proactive people, when they are in the circle of control, so proactive people are those people who are like pure water. No matter how much you shake pure water, nothing is going to out, no fizzing out. So reactive people, they play the blame game, they are like a bottle of soda, and they are like people who always wants, you know, fair weather in their life. So they are like fair weather people. And reactive or proactive people are those people who are all weather people. In fact, they carry their own weather. So, therefore, as far as responsibility is concerned, one has to understand that the circle of control which I have in my life, how to use it properly. And then, we have to balance between our past and our future. And this particular Roman god depicts this very wonderfully. This Roman god of beginnings and endings, known as Janus. And from this Janus comes the month of January. And it's very significant that the month of January is that month wherein you can look back into December and you can look ahead in the month of February. So this particular Roman god depicts how one has to have a proper understanding of one's past, and also one should have a proper planning for the future. As it is said that yesterday was history, tomorrow will be a mystery. Today is a gift given to you by God, therefore it is called present. Now gift and present are synonyms, and also present means present tense. So, in the voyage of our life, we have to look up front what are the obstacles coming up. And we have to also, when you are driving the vehicle of your life, you have to look in the rear view mirror to also make sure that what is following behind. So similarly, in our life, we have to have a proper understanding of our future and proper understanding of our past, so that we can make proper choices at the present moment. Now, coming to step two, that after we have taken some charge of our life, after we have kind of nourished or harnessed the ability to respond to the proper things in our life, then the next step is that we should have a courage to change. And we have some quotes over here. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I can't change, courage to change those things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is calling Arjuna Purusha Vyagram. That Arjuna, you are lion amongst men. Why? Because those species, they have the courage to change. So because you are lion amongst men, don't succumb to these degraded values. In fact, rise above and change your attitudes about life. So a person who is courageous will have the courageous heart to make about a change in one's life. And many times when it comes to changing, again, what's the name of the game which people, they play when they don't want to change in their lives? And therefore, it is said, every morning in Africa, a stag wakes up to know it must outrun the fastest lion or it will be killed. And every morning in Africa, a lion wakes up to know it must outrun the slowest stag or it will starve. It doesn't matter whether you are a lion or a stag. When the sun comes up, you would better be running. The rat race, as they say. So therefore it is said, nowadays, it is not the survival of the fittest. It is survival of the fastest. Two people, they were friends, they went for a hunting excursion. And they spotted a lion and the lion started chasing behind them. So as the lion was preparing himself to chase behind these two people, one of them, he started taking out his running shoes and started putting on the running shoes. So the other one asked, "What are you doing? Do you expect you are going to outrun this lion by putting on your running shoes?" He said, "No. By putting on the running shoes, I can outrun you, because the lion needs one of us." So many times in this run brother run rat race, we are simply running or trying to outrun, you know, those people, you know, who are just close to us and can push them back and somehow get ahead, and that we feel that we are very much courageous for that. And many times it becomes a kind of a habit, that because of our conditionings and habit which we are used to, we are not able to come out, have that courage to come out and change ourselves. Like, there was one football team, since recent events might be pertinent, that this football team reached the finals. And on the day when the final match was about to take place, just a day before that, the goalkeeper, he met with an accident and broke his knee bone. Now the goalkeeper is one of the most important players. And the captain of the team was very much concerned that, you know, our substitute is not up to the mark, that we can win. We have reached the finals. But still, appointed the substitute also, took the substitute along with the team, and they were heading towards the football stadium. So on the way, their car stopped at a stoplight. And this captain was looking out from the window. He saw that there was a watermelon shop. And there was this watermelon seller. And just a truck full loaded with watermelons had come. And what was happening, that the person on the truck was throwing the watermelons, And this person in the shop was receiving all the watermelons and placing it in the shop. And the captain of this football team, as he was seeing this, he saw that this person was so expert in catching the watermelons that he was not even looking up. The person from the truck was throwing randomly here and there, and this person was holding it accurately, exactly. Not even a single watermelon was falling off. So this captain thought, he's the best person to be our goalkeeper. And he just came down and asked this person, just sit in our car, I'll pay you $1,000. $1,000? Immediately sat in the car, took to the stadium and said, see, I'll give you this uniform, you know, this sports gear. Put on this and you have to stand in front of the goalpost here. And you see, you know, this spherical thing everyone is kicking around. Imagine this is a football. Or imagine this is a watermelon. Is it watermelon? Really? How are they kicking this watermelon? So the captain said, no, you have to just do what you are doing at your shop. So he said, okay. So the match proceeded and, you know, it was like the last moment and this guy was supposed to protect the goal to take place by the opponent into his goal post. So everyone was, you know, the captain was damn sure that he's going to do it. He's going to, you know, whatever person, however the person might kick the ball, he's going to catch the ball. So the ball was kicked and everyone was expecting and applauding him, and he, you know, very mysteriously he caught the ball, which was practically impossible for anyone else to do that. So he caught the ball and everyone applauded. Yes, we have finally won. What did he do? After holding the ball into his goalpost, because that was his habit. The captain didn't realize, oh my God, I forgot to notice that his habit of holding the watermelon, he was so pukka in that. But after that, he also had the habit of pushing it inside. So many times, you know, the habits and conditionings are like that. And it needs a courageous heart to come over those habits and conditionings. A couple of years ago, one brahmachari from our ISKCON movement, from Holland, he had come here. And I was talking to him, and I was asking him, how did you come to Krishna consciousness? So he was explaining, he had a very interesting lifestyle before he became a brahmachari. So he was telling that before he became a devotee, he along with his friends, they would do really far out things. And I asked, what kind of far out things you would do? So he said, sometimes they would climb up a huge skyscraper building, and from the terrace they would take a pole suspended out in the air and they would hang down from the pole and then look down. I said, why you would do that? He said, just to feel within, what kind of emotions you have when you are looking down from a skyscraper building, as you are looking down, you know, on the street, what are the emotions within you feel? So just to feel those emotions, we would do that. This is really far out. And then he said, that you want to know what else we would do? That they would stand on the railway tracks and wait for the train to come. And when the train would be approaching, they would start running towards the train. I said, then? And they would be running, and as they were very close, just about to be hit by the train, they would jump off and save themselves. And I said, why you would do that? And he said, we wanted to see the expression on the face of the driver. That, you know, how the driver looks when, you know, somebody so close to his train. So he said, one time he was doing that. He himself was doing. The train was approaching. He started running towards the train. And looking into the eyes of the driver, he jumped off one side. He landed on his hands. The train passed. He was saved. And then as he was getting up, he saw a book. And he saw a photo of a person on that book. And he thought, this person appears to be the most far out person I have seen in my life. And that was the photo of Srila Prabhupada. And it was Ishopanishad, of all books. So he sat on the railway track and read the whole Ishopanishad. And Ishopanishad is a book which is the most far out of all philosophies. The Supreme Lord walks but doesn't walk. He's inside but he's outside of everything. And this is the most far out philosophy because he was into far out things. So there was an address slip there. He went to the temple there. And over there then he was told about the philosophy. And because he was into such courageous things, adventurous things, so he was saying that he was told by the devotees that if you are really courageous, then take up this courage in your life. Not just face death, but rise above death. Do you have that courage? And we will give you that lifestyle by which you can not just face death, but you can rise above death. And he became convinced. And this person, he became a book distributor. And the most popular book which he would distribute was Ishopanishad. So, one has to have that courage in order to change one's situation if one wants to actually relive. Now, many times when we speak of changes, small changes in our life actually can make huge destination differences. Like when a flight takes off from New York and is heading towards this place in Israel called Tel Aviv. Now, there is a predetermined air passage for the flight to take to reach Israel. But it is said that if the flight just takes 1 degree of a change towards north, then the flight reaches Moscow instead of Israel. Just 1 degree of change towards the north and the flight will land in Moscow instead of Israel. In Air Force we were taught, the rifle training, that when you are aiming at the target, if the aim is just half a fraction deviated from the target, then that will change the entire trajectory of the bullet. You might hit somewhere else, you know, totally a different destination, different target. So many times we have to just make small little changes, and we'll see in long run how small little changes can actually bring about a huge destination difference. And therefore many times when people are not willing to take those changes, then these are some of the patent excuses which they give. I have always done it that way. I have never done it this way. That's not my job. I don't think it will make any difference. And finally, the patent excuse is, I am too busy. So when a person doesn't want to make even slight changes, these are some of the patent excuses. And there is a term for this. Many times, when people come to our discourses and seminars, many times they carry this thing called selective listening. Very selective in their listening. Like this example is given, that one time there was a very devout Muslim who would every day offer his namaz 5 times a day, going to the masjid. And finally he stopped going one fine day. And the Maulvi was very much, surprised, and he was feeling very sorry that why this person has stopped coming. So one day he met this person on the street and asked that, why all of a sudden you have stopped coming and offering your namaz? So he said, the other day I read in Quran that one should not offer namaz in a mosque. The Maulvi said, what? You read that in Quran? How can Quran say something like that? He said, yes, I can show you. So he brought and showed it to the Maulvi. And yes, the Maulvi also read, one should not offer namaz in a mosque. And the Maulvi said, can I have this book? So he was given this book and he went. And again he opened that page. And actually that was the last line of that page. One should not offer namaz in a mosque. Then he turned over the page and the first line was, without washing one's hands and feet. So the whole statement was, one should not offer namaz in a mosque without washing one's hands and feet. This is called selective listening. I remember my mother used to tell this story. There were three thieves. And one day they decided that instead of stealing some money, today we shall steal something which we can enjoy right away. You know, some food article. So they went to one sweet shop and stole a pot of kheer. And then they went into the jungles, but they opened and saw that the kheer was not enough for all three of them to enjoy. So they decided that what we'll do, kheer becomes more relishable when it is cooled under moonshine. So we'll keep this kheer under moonshine for the whole night. And next day morning, one of us will enjoy. Because, you know, it's not enough for all three of us to enjoy. But then the question was, who would be that one? So they decided amongst themselves that at night, whoever gets the best dream will enjoy all of that kheer. So next morning, all three got up and they were very much enthusiastic to narrate what dream they had previous night. So the first one said, I'll tell you, the dream which I had, you will envy me. I was in Brahmaloka. I was with Lord Brahma. And he was taking me around Brahmaloka and showing me the entire Brahmaloka planet. The other one said, wait a minute. Just listen to what dream I had. I was with Lord Shiva, higher up, in Shiva Loka, and I was shaking hands with Lord Shiva. So now the first one said, oh my God, lost the kheer. Now both of them, they were looking at the third one, and the third one was appearing to be a little morose and dejected and fearful. So the second one thought that maybe he had a nightmare. So anyways, tell, what was it? So he said, should I? But it was something which really feared me so much. Should I tell you? Yeah, definitely, you should tell. So he said, last night, Hanumanji came in my dream. Hanumanji. And then what happened? Hanumanji was, holding his gada. And he was pointing at me. And with red hot eyes, pointing that gada at me, he said, drink that kheer. And then the other two, don't tell that you drank it. They opened the lid and the kheer was over. Why didn't you wake us up? He said, you were in Brahmaloka and you were in Shivaloka. You were too far away. And Hanumanji was very close to me. So this is called selective listening. That whatever we want to listen and apply in our life, we try to change it and become very flexible in that regard. So therefore, here we have some more quotes. As far as the third step is concerned, that we have to get out of our comfort zone after we make that courageous decision to change. And it is said, you can't make footprints in the sands of time by sitting on your butt. Which means you have to get up and walk. Come out of the comfort zone. And who wants to leave butt prints in the sands of time? Sometimes to change means you may have to step out 3 million light years outside of your comfort zone. And one of the few things that can't be recycled in the modern age is wasted time in our comfort zone. And therefore it is said that getting out of our comfort zone is like trying an entirely new cuisine in our life. Something which we have never tasted before. Say for example, someone who has never tasted rasgulla, never even tasted even once a rasgulla, and somebody brings in front of him, you know, nice, succulent, huge sized, pristinely white rasgulla, and then offers him that this is something very wonderful, you'll enjoy it. And he becomes apprehensive because he has never tasted it before. So he might say, well, this looks like a table tennis ball. And then he might say, maybe it's a golf ball. Why should I? So if a person is very much apprehensive and he's just speculating that a rasgulla might be a table tennis ball or a golf ball, unless he comes out of that apprehensive attitude, comes out from his comfort zone or fearful zone and enters into that zone in which he can try out physically, then only he can know that actually this is something so wonderful. And also the example is given that many times the birdlings, the small siblings of birds, when they are very small, they are in a very nice cozy nest. But the bird, the parent bird, it feeds the birdlings only to that point of time when the birdlings have to come out of that cozy nest and have to fly out. So if the bird simply remains in that cozy nest, then the bird is no bird. The bird has to come out of the cozy nest and has to fly in the sky. Similarly, we have to come out of our comfort zones. And many times, our comfort zone becomes something like this for us if we don't come out. It is said that our comfort zones become our coffins, where we rest in peace. It might appear to be very comfortable and people might write outside, resting in peace. So if in our life, we are simply shackled within our comfort zone, then at times that becomes like our own coffins while we are still living. And therefore it is said that when people are on their deathbed, they don't lament so much for what they have done, but many times they lament for what they haven't done, and many times they lament for what they could have done. So therefore, before we go into that kind of lamentation, we should have the courage to jump off from our comfort zone and come out into the courage zone, which we'll be discussing. So, what are the consequences of someone who doesn't do that, or someone who is very apathetic, very lazy, very lethargic? So, in defense, you know, this one particular thing which we'll be showing was taught to us, that how every single item for a soldier in a war is so very important. And by this we'll understand. So one of our instructors, he told us this. And there was a field crack training camp for us. We had to literally go out and live in the jungles and experience a warlike situation. So in this camp, this was being showed to us and told to us, that for want of a nail, once the horseshoe was lost. Now, all of you know horseshoe which is nailed to the feet of the horse. So it is said, for want of a nail, the horseshoe was lost. For want of the horse shoe, the horse was lost. For want of the horse, the soldier was lost. For want of the soldier, the battle was lost. For want of the battle, the kingdom was lost. And it was all for want of a horseshoe nail. Just for that one nail, all of this happened. So many times, we might think that coming out from our comfort zone is not so important as the horseshoe nail was not felt very important. But that little thing, you can see the consequences of that, what happened. And therefore Krishna is saying in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Neha bhikramana shosti pratyavayo na vidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Mahato bhaya, the greatest fear in this human form of life is to glide down into the animal species. So Krishna is saying, svalpam apyasya dharmasya, a little change if we do, then we can be protected from mahato bhayat. Now, conversely, if we take this particular statement of Krishna and try to understand with logic, that if Krishna is saying that little devotional service can save us from mahato bhayat, then little involvement in materialistic life can put us in mahato bhayat. So therefore, if we think that little materialistic kind of lifestyle of mine, my own comfort zone, my own coffins, so cozy, you know, so nice, and it might turn up that we might land up losing this human form of life. Mahato bhayat, as Krishna says. And therefore, we have to come out of our comfort zone to enter into the courage zone. And what are the characteristics of someone who is just lying in his comfort zone and someone who has gone into the courage zone? Things I enjoy doing: safety and security, relaxation and ease, freedom from risk, things I am accustomed to do. These are all the characteristics of people who are lying in their comfort zone. And the people in the courage zone, the people, things which I am afraid of but still I'll take up in my life, things I have never tried, then unexplored territories, then things that are very difficult, hard moments, opportunity, bravery and adventure. And therefore it is said, you can't discover new oceans unless you have the courage to lose sight of the shore. It's time to set your sails. And therefore, insanity, this word insanity, its definition is given: to keep on doing the same things again and again and again and expect new results. That's called insanity. It's like one is trying to feed a lion with all the meat products, expecting that the lion will turn a vegetarian one day. And therefore we have to be at times very careful also, that in order to come out from our comfort zone into the courage zone, it should not be done in a very blind way or in ignorance. Like we give this example for our preachers, that we should know whom to preach, where to preach and how to preach. Like this allegory is given that one devotee started preaching, taking this courage and started preaching to a lion about our philosophy. So this devotee is preaching to a lion how you are not this body, you are spirit soul, then no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex and no all that. And you know, the lion was nodding and listening to the whole discourse. And after everything was being spoken to him, then after the lecture, what happens? It's prasadam time. So the lion was staring at the devotee and took two steps closer to the devotee and was staring in the eyes of the devotee, started to open his mouth and started chanting, Mahaprasade Govinde. So one should not be foolish enough to take that kind of a courage, as you know this allegory is given, preaching to a lion, and ultimately what happened? He became the Mahaprasad for the lion. So one has to be discreet in trying to jump off from the comfort zone into the courage zone. And now we come to our step 4, which says that one has to develop a terrific attitude. And something which I found very interesting over here, that if the 26 alphabets starting from A till Z, if you number them like this, 1, 2, 3, 4 respectively, then what do you get? Luck, if you add it, it's 47%. Knowledge, if you add it, it comes to 96%. Hard work, if you add it, it comes to 98%. But attitude, when you add it, it comes to 100%. So, doesn't matter how much knowledge we have, doesn't matter how much hard work we can do, or just depending on luck, if we have a proper attitude, then we can make 100% of what we want through our life. And therefore, there is a beautiful verse from the Niti Shastra which explains about how attitudes are seen. So it is said in this particular verse, Eka eka padarthastu tridha bhavati vikshita kunapa kamini mamsam yogi bhi kami bhi shvabhi. So in this verse it is said, Eka eka padarthastu tridha bhavati vikshita, that there is one padartha, but three people, according to their attitudes, will look at that one padartha differently. So, very interesting, this example is given, that what is that padartha? It is said in this verse, that if there is a charming woman passing by, beautiful looking, charming woman passing by, so three people are looking at her. And how these three people, they have different attitudes according to what they are. So a charming woman is passing by. So it is said that a yogi bhi, when a yogi, a self-realized person looks at that charming woman, how does he see that charming woman? It's just a combination of Pancha Mahabhut walking. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. It's just a combination of Pancha Mahabhut. A yogi sees like that. Yogi bhi. Then kami bhi. A person who is very lusty, when he looks a charming woman passing by, what is his attitude? What a peace. You know, he might say something like that. Or shvabhi, a carnivorous animal, say a lion looks at that charming woman passing by, what will he say? What a piece of meat. He will not just say, what piece, what a piece of meat going, my lunchbox is going. So one object, eka eka padarthastu tridha bhavati vikshita kunapa kamini mamsam yogi bhi kami bhi shvabhi. So therefore, it is said that it's one's attitude, not aptitude, which will decide one's altitude in one's life. One time there was a dying husband on his deathbed, and the wife was next to him, holding his hand and lamenting. So he's reflecting back in his life and he's telling to his wife that when 40 years ago, when I met with that accident, you were by my side. And then few years after that, when I was fired from my job, still you were by my side. Then When I was ransacked by the robbers of all of my money, you were still by my side. And when I was contracted with this terminal disease and I'm lying on my deathbed, you are still by my side. So in my ultimate analysis of life, whenever you were by my side, all of these things happened. So that was his attitude. Like scientists, they were trying to find out which particular liquor has more intoxicating effect. So they took some rum and mixed some water in it and fed to a person, and he was intoxicated. Then took some whiskey, added some water in it, fed to him, he was again intoxicated. Took some, you know, vodka, added some water in it, fed to this person, again he was intoxicated. So then they finally concluded, no matter what you add with water, water is always intoxicating. So, you know, it could be one's attitude like that if one has that kind of a background. So therefore it is said that life is like a dagger which is thrown at us. Now it depends on us whether we want to hold at the handle or at the blade. It's like a dagger. And therefore, it is said that many times our attitudes and paradigms, they are like the spectacles which we wear in our life. Like for example, if we are wearing someone else's spectacles, or we are wearing spectacles with wrong prescription, how difficult it is. The things are so clear which we can see, but just because we are wearing someone else's spectacles, those who are wearing, you might have experienced, it is so difficult to see something which is so close to you. So having wrong paradigms or wrong attitudes of our life is like wearing a spectacle with wrong prescription. And when the right spectacle is given to us, then we realize, oh my God, this object was so clear. This object looked like this. I never saw this object like this. So many times, devotees, they reflect back that after coming to Krishna consciousness, the same circumstances, the same situations and objects of this world appear differently. You can see more clearly because the paradigms, the attitudes have been molded. Another example is given that if you want to paint this whole hall blue in color, it might take many days, many people, so much paint. But one thing you can do is just put on blue colored glasses. It's also one way. Then it'll be more easier, much easier, more economical also, that the whole hall will appear blue in color. So many times we think that we will take the paint and brush and try to correct or rectify the entire world, which is so difficult. What we have to only do is just change our spectacles, just change our attitudes and our paradigms, and we'll see that how the situations also change accordingly. But then we have to understand that there is something called our own perception, and there is something called the reality in front of us. And again, one of our team instructors had given us this example, that one time one naval ship was plying in the sea, and it was a dark, foggy night, and the captain of the ship was looking out through his binoculars, and he saw some light dead ahead, far away. So he kind of flashed the signal and said to that ship that move 20 degrees north, ship is coming. And immediately light flashed from that particular ship and said, you move 20 degrees north. And then again he flashed the signal and said, this is the admiral of a warship saying, you move 20 degrees north. And what was the reply? The reply was that this is the junior officer from the lighthouse. you move 20 degrees north, otherwise you will lose your life. So then immediately the ship was moved. So he perceived that this is another ship. And he was giving instructions thinking that there is another ship over there. But actually it was a lighthouse. So similarly, we may have so many perceptions about our life. But it has to be guided properly by some kind of lighthouse. Lighthouse of spiritual knowledge and spiritual guides. And then only our perceptions and the realities will have compatibility within them. Now, we come to the fifth step, which is building a solid set of values. And here we have some quotes. Better to get a stiff neck from aiming too high than a hunchback from aiming too low. Men of principles are bold, but not all bold people are men of principles. Competence can take us to the top, but character keeps us there. The honest is judged by his values, whereas the corrupt by his price. One time there was a carpenter working in a construction company. And he served his boss for many, many years and he wanted to take voluntary retirement, VRS. So the boss told him that, okay, you just make the last house and then you can retire. So it's like, you know, when you have the last paper, the final exam, the last paper, how you want to finish it off. So therefore, he wanted to just finish off that last assignment given to him. So he used the cheapest wood to make that house, the cheapest fixtures, the cheapest raw materials to make that house, and somehow finished it. And after he finished everything, he said to the boss, you know, the house is ready. Here is the key. And the boss took the key and said, actually, this is a gift from me to you. As you are retiring, I wanted to offer you a gift. And this is a gift from me to you for all of the hard work which you did for all those years. And then he was thinking, oh my God, only if I would have known that he's going to offer me this house, I would have used the best wood, the best fixture, the best of all. So similarly, this human form of life is like a house given by God to us. But what are the values we use to make this house look better? We think we use the cheapest values, the cheapest morals, the cheapest principles. And then finally, on the deathbed, we come to know, oh, it was supposed to be a gift offered to me, but I used the cheapest wood, the cheapest values, the cheapest principles. The example of a housewife is given that she purchases mangoes from the market, crate full of mangoes, and then she is looking out which are the mangoes which are on the verge of rotting. Those are the ones should be served first. So every time when she takes out the mangoes, she's only looking for the rotting ones and serves them. So the family members are actually having only rotten mangoes. So similarly, in our life, we are always waiting and not letting the values take over our life. And therefore, we always live a life and eating out the rotten mangoes of our life, not knowing that if we just use the best at the present moment of all of our energies and abilities, then we can enjoy the best of our life. And therefore, we have given this term of container versus content. So you have a container, just like there is a glass over here. It's a container. So more important than the container is what is inside the container, the content. Condition versus consciousness. And therefore, it is said, it's what's inside that counts. It's not the color of the balloon. It's what's inside that makes it go up. And if this question is asked, then amongst all these balloons, will a red balloon, will it fly or will it not? The color doesn't make any distinctions. It is what is inside. It's not that red color balloon means red means you have to stop. So red color balloon will not go up. It is actually what is inside. So therefore, many times in this world we see that people are very much fascinated just by the container of people. How they look, how they dress, how they talk, how they appear. But as far as the content is concerned, you won't find those kind of people on the billboards of the city. You'll find only beautiful looking people where the containers are very beautiful. But if you try to scrape in and find out what is the content within it, many times it might be something very obnoxious. We have the example of Mother Teresa and Mahatma Gandhi. As far as their physical container is concerned, it was not very beautiful. But why are they glorified? They are glorified for their content within. And therefore it is said that empty gunny bags, they can never stand upright. When a gunny bag is empty, it has to be leveled to the ground. Only when it is having some content in it, then you see the gunny bag standing upright. So therefore, one should have a proper content within. And this beautiful example is given that one time four instructions were given to a pencil. When the pencil was created, the first instruction, that your real value lies within you. The second instruction, only when that within comes without can you make any impact on something. And the third instruction, that for that within to come without, the process will be very painful. And the fourth instruction was that only when you are in the hands of a proper writer can you make any impact. So over here you see in a pencil, what is the real value of the pencil? It's within the pencil, the lead. And only when that lead comes out can that pencil make any impact. And for that lead to come out, the process is sharpening, very painful. And only when it is in the hands of a proper writer can it make any impact. Similarly, in our life, our real value lies within us. And only when that within comes without can we make some impact. And for that within to come without, the process might be a little bit painful, just like right now some of you might be a little pain trying to change your positions, you know, sitting for practically 1.5 hours now, tolerating this person here. A little painful. Huh? But when we hear about these values given to us by the higher authorities, then you know our real impact can be seen. And only when we are in the hands of a proper writer, proper guides, then only can we have any impact. So many times we see that when these things are not given much importance, the value within, then this is what is seen. That people are used and objects are loved. Because everyone is seen just as a container. So because everyone is just seen as a container, so therefore they are seen as objects. And therefore many times it's very difficult to deal with the content of other person. And therefore we see that in this human civilization, sometimes the laws which are enforced upon we human beings are on such gross level. Like, I was told that in Chicago, there is this one train station, Milwaukee. And there is a toilet there, which is always so crowded. Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan Ki. So the toilet at this train station is always so crowded that the rail authorities were finding it so difficult how to deal with this problem. There is so much of traffic inside because Chicago is a windy city, so cold also. So the railway superintendent had one idea. He said that tomorrow onwards all the traffic will be managed inside the toilet. You will see, there will be no problem, no traffic jams inside the toilet. And actually the other authorities they saw that the problem was Saul, and they tried to find out what did he do. So what he did, above each urinal, he pasted, "You are now on national TV." And there was a fake camera behind. So everyone started to come out very quickly. So many times, you know, because we are on such gross levels, so the laws which are enforced upon us are also on such gross levels in order to rectify us. And therefore it is said, amongst all the species, it is only the human species which are destroying its own species systematically. And therefore, when we are talking of building solid set of values, we have to evaluate before we judge. And therefore, these are some of the things which many times are kind of a misconception. That we have to be bold but not a bully. We have to have humility but not stupidity. We should be confident but not conceited, tender but not weak, strong but not arrogant, firm but not stubborn, cool but not cold, content but not complacent, detached but not indifferent, wise but not otherwise. And now we come to our sixth step, building protective shields. And in this, we have to build protective shields from within and from without. And as far as within is concerned, there is this example given, the Great Wall of China. The structure of this wall is 1400 miles long. It is so big, huge in size. And it was built 3 centuries before Christ. And massive amounts of labor, energy and money was employed to make this huge wall. But it is said that after building this huge wall, which the Chinese felt that they will be safe now from the enemies, immediately after that, 3 times they were attacked. And not even once the wall was damaged. Without damaging that huge wall, the Chinese were attacked 3 times. So how did that take place? The enemy had to simply bribe the guard and walk in without damaging the wall. So they were thinking that the wall is protecting them, but the enemy was within, not outside. So similarly, we might have great walls of China around us, thinking that I am well protected in all of these protective shields, but we may not realize that the enemy is lying within us. And another example is given, it's called the termite effect, that a wood or a wooden pillar might be seen standing upright, but if from within the termites have eaten out everything of that wood, it's just a matter of a small blow and the entire structure will crumble down. And therefore, we have to build protective shields from within first. And then from without, how to do that? And therefore, it is said that living in this modernistic civilization, media, television and the hedonistic lifestyle, these are the things we are actually swimming and drowning in a world of media which is actually controlling us and actually destroying us from without now. And therefore, it is said that tobacco companies spend $500,000 every hour of every day promoting and advertising cigarettes. In fact, there was one owner of a cigarette company, and he looked at one 15-year-old boy smoking cigarette, and he's expressing his surprise. He's saying, "Alas, what a calamitous situation is this. A 15-year-old boy is smoking a cigarette." And everyone was surprised. Who is saying this? He's the owner of a cigarette company, and he's saying. And then later on he said, A 15-year-old is smoking cigarette and it's not our brand. Why didn't I die before seeing that? So their target is the teenagers, the youth. Because once they are hooked up to their brand, then they will go on. And many times the advertisements are so catchy and attractive, made for each other. We are just made for each other, I and the cancer. We are just made for each other. Live life king size and die dog size then. Like in America, they had this rule that every cigarette commercial on TV has to have the statutory warning somewhere on bold letters coming on the screen. Now, you see that whenever they advertise cigarettes, you know, you'll always have these beautiful looking people, how good it is, how cool it is, and all of these things they say. So smart looking people, cowboy people, you know, with a wonderful style and flair, they smoke and they show how you can also be like that if you smoke this brand. So one particular TV commercial, now the condition was you had to show the statutory warning, cigarette smoking is injurious to health. In fact, now they have to write that statutory warning on each cigarette stick, because people, they know what is the warning. But they would take out the cigarette, put the pack inside the pocket. But then, when they have the stick in their hand, and they are smoking and reading statutory warning, cigarette smoking is injurious to health. So, some good sense might dawn upon them. In spite of that, people were still addicted. So, this TV commercial which showed a beautiful, smart-looking, handsome cowboy, he comes and he takes one puff. And now, in that particular commercial, they had to show the statutory warning. So just for a few seconds, on the screen comes a statutory warning. Cigarette smoking is injurious to health. And again, this handsome-looking guy comes. Again, he takes a puff and says, "Who cares?" So what was the last message? We showed. We fulfilled the condition. We showed the statutory warning. But the last message was, "Who cares?" So therefore, it is said that the media is hitting us like anything from all sides. The Reader Digest article said a weekday edition of a newspaper probably contains as much information as the average 17th century person would have come across in his entire lifetime. And therefore, if a one-page newspaper advertisement can sell a bottle of shampoo, don't you think a full-length movie or magazine can sell a lifetime? And therefore, here was something very interesting. Here you see a boy looking at the TV screen, looking at the moon. And what is his question? What is the moon supposed to advertise, Papa? So nowadays, they don't even know that moon is something which is natural. It's a natural beauty. Asking questions like this, or asking questions, who invented Mount Everest? These kind of questions. So how people are brainwashed by the media, how much they are living in a world which has been programmed for them that they should behave in a certain way. So at this point of time, I would like to show you a small 5-minute video about brainwashing. And in this particular video, can someone switch off the lights? And in this particular video, you will see how a boy, an innocent looking boy, is brainwashed. Can switch off this one? Yeah, this one. How an innocent-looking boy is brainwashed by the media around, by the lifestyle around, and he is made to convince about something which he is not, and which we call it as Maya.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, Bingo.
Excuse me?
Hi, Bingo.
Bingo?
Bingo. Bingo the clown.
I'm not Bingo.
Hi, Bingo. Bingo, Bingo the clowno.
But I'm
Bingo.
Not.
Bingo. Bingo the clowno.
But I'm not.
Hi. Hi, Bingo.
But I'm not Bingo.
He's coming, you know.
He's coming?
To check on your progress.
Who's coming? Who's coming? Bingo?
You're Bingo! Bingo! Bingo!
Here he comes.
Hi, Bingo. But I'm not Bingo.
Are you looking at my money?
No, 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 no.
Good. Would you like to?
No. I don't know. You know, I really don't. Yes. Yes, actually, I would. I would like to look at your money. I really would. I really, really would. Can I look at your money?
Good. You're a good little Bingo. Aren't you?
No! I don't know! I don't think so. Come on.
Music, please!
Maybe I am Bingo.
Bingo?
Yes, Bingo.
Bingo. Bingo the clown?
Bingo the clown. Bingo. Bingo the clowno. I am Bingo. I'm Bingo. Bingo the clowno. Bingo. Bingo the clown. I'm Bingo. That's me. That's me.
Hare Krishna. So here, you saw in this 5-minute video how this innocent looking boy was actually being brainwashed of something which he was not. Similarly, in our life, we are also subtly, unknowingly being brainwashed to become some kind of a Bingo. And initially, we resist. But slowly, gradually, we come to this understanding, maybe I should behave in this way. Maybe I am a Bingo. Maybe I should eat this kind of food maybe I should dress in this way, maybe I should talk in this way, I should have this kind of a lifestyle. So how much unknowingly we are being programmed, orchestrated by the lifestyle and the media around us. And therefore, it is said that the food which we eat, the dress, the kind of dresses which we wear, the lifestyles which we have, the music which we hear. I was told, somebody just played to me this, something becoming very famous, rap music. And when I heard that, it appeared as if, you know, this person who is singing so fast, that as if he's been constipated for 7 days. And in fact, some of these rap singers went to one of the villages of India. And over there, they saw that the farmers were playing full blast these rap music in their fields. So the musicians were very much impressed and happy. They came to these farmers and asked that, what was that inspired you to listen to this rap music? And they what kind of music? This rap music which you are playing? We don't know anything about what music is this. We know one thing, that when we play, no animals come and attack our fields. Just a few days ago, somebody told me that there is one singer and who sings in such a way his song is attracting ghosts. Is it happening? That ghosts are getting attracted when people are singing that person's song, so we are progressing. So there was this rap music which was chasing away animals. Now the progress is that this song is attracting ghosts rather than chasing animals. So that was better off, at least. So the entire lifestyle which has been given to us, dumped upon us, we kind of accept it as kind of a reality, as this innocent looking boy who later on started believing that he's Bingo, the clowny. So over here we have come up with this term that instead of some people who are NRIs, some of us, what we have become? RNIs, resident non-Indians. That residing in India but being non-Indians. I was giving a seminar in Belgaum and one person asked me this question, that you were working in the Air Force, why did you leave it? Now we have one soldier less to protect the borders of our country. So we told him that, okay, as far as the Army, Navy and Air Force is concerned, there are so many practically every day getting inducted into these forces, thousands of them, and who are protecting the borders of our country. But how many soldiers are getting inducted to protect the culture of our country? Yes, you have the borders of our country protected by these soldiers, but the enemy is entering through the satellite. What about having an army to protect our Vedic culture from that particular attack? How many soldiers do you know of are getting inducted in that army? In the name of secularism, we just have a bunch of atheists left now. In fact, one of our students was telling that one of the thought for the day, he went to the school and he saw on the blackboard it was written, I was an atheist until I realized that I am God. So that was the thought for the day. Think about that. So yes, we may say that our borders are protected, but as we use this famous statement that what the other enemies couldn't destroy the culture of our country in so many years, the Britishers couldn't destroy the culture of our country in 200 years, the Mughals couldn't destroy in 800 years of their rule, this media has destroyed in just 20 years of its rule over us. And therefore, we have to understand that what we are being born for. There was this king, Saint Louis the 16th of France, and he was dethroned by his own people, and his son, the prince, was supposed to take over as the next king. They tried to take the son outside of the kingdom, and he was put in isolation, just to make sure that the son shouldn't become the next king. So what they tried to do with the prince, that they fed him with degraded kind of foodstuffs and tried to make him the slave of his appetite. Then he was surrounded, you know, with lewd and lusty women. Filthy and foul language was used for him. And like that, all different kinds of enticements and temptations was surrounding him, just so that, you know, his soul should degrade down to the lowest levels. And after many years of that particular experiences, he came out unscathed, unhurt. And the people who were trying to do upon him, they were very much surprised, and they asked that, how is it for so many years we tried to degrade you, but nothing happened to you? And just one statement he made. He said, I was born to be a king. I knew that. Whatever you are doing, I knew that it is all enticement, superficiality around me, because I was convinced in my heart that I am born to be a king. Similarly, we are born to free ourselves from this materialistic life. In fact, this human form of life is like a high-tech computer. Now, if you have a high-tech computer, and if you use that computer only for typing some letters, it's foolishness. There are so many programs and functions in that computer you can benefit yourself from. So similarly, this human form of life has got so many functions within it inbuilt, by which we can come out from this tabernacle of this material world and go back to the spiritual world. And it's like a valuable diamond which we are simply using as a paperweight, not realizing its proper value. And therefore, now we come to our seventh step, which talks of getting a life education. And we have some quotes here. It is better to be uneducated than ill-educated. If you think education is expensive, try ignorance. Wisdom comes from living, not just studying. Too many people have tried to get a lifestyle instead of a life. Now, all of us in our childhood, we must have heard this poem, kindergarten poem, Ringa Ringa Roses, Pocket Full of Roses, Husha Vusha, All Fell Down. Do you know why this poem was written? What is the actual meaning of this poem? It was written by the King of France in the 19th century. When France was attacked by a severe bubonic plague, and the king, out of sorrow, not a desperation, he wrote these lines, which actually referred to all the plague-affected patients. That when they are affected by this plague, Ringa Ringa Roses, their skin has ring-like formations, which are red in color, which is a symptom. And because of that, pocket full of poses, medicines. Because one has to take so many medicines. So pocket full of poses. Husha, busha. It refers to another symptom, that you keep sneezing like that, making that sound. All fell down, dead. And how happily we were holding hands, Ringa Ringa Roses, you know, chanting that poem. So many times we may not realize that what is this education sometimes it is given to us, what is actually the real meaning behind that. And therefore, when it comes to life education, these three things, as a doctor does to the patient, we have to examine, we have to diagnose the disease, and then prescribe. And many times, if the examination and prescription is not proper, the examination and diagnosis is not proper, the prescription will be faulty and wrong. I had one friend of mine from Himachal. He was my tennis partner. And he was like kind of a flirt. Every 20-25 days, he had a new girlfriend. And that was his like target. Not more than 25 days. Another girlfriend. Like, you know, we change our toothbrush every month. So he would change girlfriends like that every 25 days. So he came to know that, you know, I go to temple, ISKCON temple in Delhi over there. And so his consciousness was anything feminine would trigger off, you know, his target, his goal. So he said, I would also like to come to this temple of yours. So I said, why? And he said, because anything feminine would strike his, you know, that thing within his mind. So he said, I would like to come to temple, you know, because in temple you can get puja, aarti, bhakti, shanti. So when you come to a temple, you know, you can get all these things. And he was referring to names of some future girlfriends he can have, named puja, aarti, bhakti and shanti, like that. So many times if the examination and diagnosis is not done properly, then the prescription will be something like this. And therefore, a life education should teach us the following things. It should give us some willpower to relive and change and come out of our comfort zone. And also, another power we should get, the want power. Things which I should do and things which I should not do. Many times when this want power comes in, people are very much apprehensive. You Hare Krishnas are joy killers. Killing joy, you know. You don't do this, you don't do that, especially you don't do that. And many times, you know, they think that this want power is something impractical. So along with the willpower, we have to develop the want power. And for that, we have to simplify our life. Living in a civilization like this, like I was told about this incident, that one person, he went to a shopping mall. Now, in the Western world, they have these huge shopping malls, like everything under one roof. To go from one corner to the other corner, it might take you hours. So, this person came out from this shopping mall with a fishing rod, with a fishing boat, and a pickup truck. And the salesman who sold all of this to this person, he was awarded and he was called for the meeting, and the owner of the shopping mall, you know, gave his example that how this person sold to one person a fishing rod, fishing boat and a pickup truck. Just one sale. And then he was asked that, how did you do that? So he said that actually, I told him that, see, fishing is so good and, you know, you can enjoy fishing. But if you really want to enjoy good fishing, you should go, you know, into the waters. So therefore, you may need a fishing boat. We also have another counter fishing boat. So why don't you get a fishing boat along with a fishing rod? Because real fishes you can catch when you are really inside the waters. So that's how I got him to purchase the fishing boat. And then when he was at the counter purchasing a fishing boat, then I told him, see, how will you carry this huge boat? You may need a pickup truck. So we also sell pickup trucks. So why don't you buy one of the pickup trucks from there, from that counter? So he bought the pickup truck. So everyone was astounded that what wonderfully you sold all these things to one person. And then one person asked, but how at the first place did you convince him to buy the fishing rod? So he said, actually, he had come just to buy one aspirin. And I told him, you are having headache. Why don't you go out for a change? Go out fishing. And then I told, we have a fishing rod, fishing boat, pickup truck. So he, poor guy, he had come just to purchase one aspirin for a headache, and he came out with a pickup truck, a fishing boat and a fishing rod inside. So many times our life becomes like that. Instead of simplifying our lives become so complicated. And therefore it is said that yesterday's luxuries, they become today's necessities. What is yesterday's luxury becomes today's necessity. If you don't have a cell phone, are you existing in this world? If you don't have an email ID, one devotee was telling, if you don't have an email ID, you are not recognized. Even if you are standing with, you know, all your physical body, you don't have an email ID, you don't have any identity. So how everything is making our life so much complicated. So life education should teach us how to simplify our life. And finally, we also had this particular proverb in the defense. The more you sweat in peace, the less you bleed in war. So life education should help us to work hard during the peace time, so that at the time of death, which is the war time, we should be bleeding less. Now, the last step which one has to take is living our life with humility. Peter Barwash says, people with humility don't think less of themselves. They just think of themselves less. Humility is the embarrassment you feel when you tell people how wonderful you are. And the example is given that humility is like the skin over a fruit. You have a mango or an orange which has juice in it. But the juice, it is kept intact when the skin is over it. So similarly, whatever values we might have, whatever attributes and qualities we might have, if it is not properly protected by that skin of humility, then all of those values will rot in due course of time. And therefore, we have another example here, that humility is like a boat, and all the other qualities, they are like big rocks. Even if you have the biggest rocks, 100 kg worth of its weight, but if there is a simple boat beneath it, the boat will carry that huge load of the rocks. And instead, if you just have a small pebble without a boat, what will happen? The pebble will reach the bottom of the body of water. So even if a person might have just one quality, which is like a small pebble, but if that person doesn't have humility, which is like a boat, even that small pebble will reach the bottom of that river. Even if, on the other hand, if a person has many qualities, but if he has humility within, then that humility is like the boat which carries all those qualities in its proper way. And one might then wonder that this world is so big, there are so many people here, so how should I begin? But where was I to start, as you read over here? The world is so vast, I shall start with the country I know best, which is my own. But my country is so very large, I'd better start with my own town. But my town too is so large, I'd best start with my street, know my home, know my family. Never mind, I shall start with myself. And therefore, in conclusion, we can say that let us become murderers and killers of our hackneyed, stereotyped, materialistic, nightmarish, phantasmagorical, hedonistic lifestyle which we are leading. And let us resurrect again and be born again, relive again to the life of virtue, chastity, purity and devotion. And that can be accomplished only when we purify our heart from within. And the process is that by just chanting ఈ హరే కృష్ణ మహామంత్ర, హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ్ 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 హరే హరే. దిస్ హరే కృష్ణ మహామంత్ర ఇస్ లైక్ యాంటీ డెత్ పిల్ బై విచ్ వీ కెన్ రీలివ్. లైక్ వన్ టైమ్ దర్ వాజ్ డెత్ ప్రొసెషన్ గోయింగ్, అండ్ ఇన్ ద డెత్ ప్రొసెషన్ యు నో ద డెడ్ పర్సన్ వాజ్ ఆన్ ద స్ట్రెచర్, అండ్ వీ నో ఇన్ ఇండియా హౌ పీపుల్ ఆర్ కేరింగ్ అండ్ దే ఆర్ కాలింగ్ అవుట్ రామ్ నామ్ సత్య హై. సో దర్ వాజ్ అ ఫాదర్ అండ్ అ సన్ వాజ్ అబ్జర్వింగ్ దిస్ డెత్ ప్రొసెషన్. సో ద సన్ ఇస్ ఆస్కింగ్ టు ద ఫాదర్, పాపా వాట్ ఈస్ దిస్ గోయింగ్ ఆన్? ద ఫాదర్ ఈస్ టెలింగ్ బెటా దిస్ ఇస్ అ డెత్ ప్రొసెషన్ గోయింగ్ ఆన్ అండ్ దే ఆర్ చాంటింగ్ ద నేమ్స్ ఆఫ్ రామ్. సో ద సన్ ఇస్ ఆస్కింగ్ వై దట్ పర్సన్ ఇస్ నాట్ చాంటింగ్ హూ ఇస్ యు నో స్లీపింగ్ ఆన్ ద స్ట్రెచర్. సో ద ఫాదర్ సెడ్ బికాస్ హీ ఇస్ డెడ్. నౌ జస్ట్ సీ ద ఇన్నోసెంట్ లాజిక్ ఆఫ్ ద చైల్డ్. ద చైల్డ్ రివర్స్ ద లాజిక్ అండ్ ఆస్క్ ద ఫాదర్, సో ఇఫ్ దిస్ పర్సన్ హూ ఇస్ డెడ్ ఇస్ నాట్ చాంటింగ్ ద నేమ్స్ ఆఫ్ రామ్, దెన్ ఐ కెన్ డెడ్యూస్ దట్ హూఎవర్ ఇస్ నాట్ చాంటింగ్ ద నేమ్స్ ఆఫ్ రామ్ ఇస్ డెడ్. And the father realized he was not chanting. So the father said, let's join the procession. Ram Naam Satya, he also started chanting. So therefore it is said that before that time comes, when we have to lie on that stretcher, when we will be unable to chant the names of the Supreme Lord, better when we are alive, try to relive this materialistic life and chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So let us give a big hand. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Shikshashtakam Prabhu. That was a brilliant presentation.